Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of the Publisher Lab. And I'm Tyler Bishop as always. And you might notice if you're watching this, which an incentive to watch now, standing right next to me is the Terminator. So welcome Terminator back to the show, or I guess for the first time. Well, no, actually we had the Terminator over here because we've had him in our building for a while. And I borrowed him this morning for a webinar that we did, but he actually is not going to be joining me today. It is who you've known to expect on our podcast, Whitney Wright. Welcome back.
Hi, it's good to be back.
Did you get worried that you were going to be replaced by the Terminator? I'm sure a lot of people kind of wonder that right now, huh?
Yeah. You know, Terminator, I think, probably has a little bit more flair than I do, but I don't know about his knowledge on digital publishing.
Well, you know, I bet it could increase quickly, but not necessarily known for the charm, the Terminators. Have you seen all the Terminator movies? And I just mean like the good ones, not like all the most recent ones, which I'm sure there's too many of.
I've seen zero, so I know nothing.
You've seen zero Terminator movies?
Yeah.
Easy. We're going to have to cut this. Otherwise, you're going to lose credibility.
I know. No one's going to believe me.
Yeah, it should definitely work the opposite way. The person that's watched the most Terminator movies should lose some form of credibility, I think. But the first two were great. But speaking of robots and Terminators, we're probably a little ways away from Terminators, but what's going on in the world of publishing and what's come to be known as kind of the world of AI these days, huh?
Yeah, I mean, our topics today, you know, mostly focus on AI because seems like every week someone's doing something with AI. You know, I saw Photoshop, you know, they, I saw an article on their, AI, which I can't remember what it's called. It's, I think we talked about it.
If people haven't seen the demo, it's incredible. If the actual software, really cool. What they ship ends up being remotely close to what they showed in the demo. It's amazing because I think everybody was saying for a long time, like, what are, you know, things like Photoshop and all these different design tools, they're going to go out of business. AI can just generate everything. And then all of a sudden you see that demo and you go, who would use anything else now? Like, they're going to be in business. They've just light speeded ahead of everyone else. And so I think that it's a good lesson there, at least in terms of jumping to conclusions about who or what will be made irrelevant, because I think Photoshop, wow, that demo is pretty incredible.
Yeah, definitely. So for our topics today, we have that WordPress has a new AI content generator, and then OpenAI has put a pause on GPT-5. And lastly, most SEOs are not too impressed with the new Google search generative experience. So pretty much all focus on AI. It's hard to find anything in digital publishing that's not kind of talking about it. Every once in a while, you know, you get a little bit, a tidbit from Google that's not focused on AI or, you know, something else. But there's just nothing else that people are talking about, which, you know, it is the hot topic. It's worth talking about.
Yeah, it would be as if we had a podcast, which is funny enough when you get my example in a minute. It would be as if we had a podcast on printing magazines and newspapers, right as the internet was starting to happen, and just to ignore the topic of the internet. So I think on our podcast, radio station, I suppose, would be the equivalent back then. So yeah, I think we're going to just see a lot of it, because to talk about just about anything else or without the context of AI in it, I think would make the show less relevant.
Yeah. And you just actually did a webinar this morning on digital publishing and AI, and that'll be available on YouTube later once we get it edited and uploaded. So make sure and keep an eye out for that. You covered a lot of important topics and basically how if you're not trying to use AI and adapt, you're going to be left behind.
Yeah, if it's something that you want to get into more, I know I give my opinions and we talk about things a lot on this show, but I wanted to try to break down sort of where I think the publisher sits in this and why I think it's an opportunity. And I start kind of giving a few examples. And I actually give a giant list of things that I think publishers should be doing. And then do not fear, because I'm going to try to help show publishers all of that over the course of the next year, hopefully. And I think me personally, I'm very excited about everything. that's going on. Now, some things are less exciting than others, and some things I think are lame. I think you're getting ready to talk about WordPress, so I'll stop there and just very appropriate, I think, segue.
Yes. So we will talk about WordPress, how it has a new AI content generator. And I think we'll see a lot of this, new plugins, you know, with AI. So Jetpack has released a new WordPress plugin that integrates AI directly into the WordPress editor. It enables content generation within the publishing workflow. It's called Jetpack AI Assistant, and it serves as a writing assistant, a conversational user interface. Users can interact with the AI assistant with writing prompts. There's additional features with like adaptive writing tones, allowing users to select different writing styles. And I think the premium version is $20 a month, but there's a free version. I guess I don't really know. I haven't looked completely into it. I guess I don't know, like, how much better is this than just using ChatGPT? Can't you ask ChatGPT?
Zero better. It's worse.
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of curious. Like, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up is that we're going to see a lot of this, and I don't want publishers to be like taken advantage of, and the fact that like they're trying to integrate AI and they're like now trying, you know, $20 here, $20 there, trying to use all these plugins and stuff when there's a free tool online and it's better.
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, I guess partially ChatGPT isn't fully free. You know, I use ChatGPT-4 a lot, and with the it has paid the plugins in beta. They're immensely helpful and beneficial, but there's a cost to using GPT-4. It's actually kind of expensive. It'll get cheaper like very quickly, in the same way that cell phone plans minutes used to be a thing, and it would run up a bill calling too many people, especially when you were roaming or something. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, when I see the WordPress thing, if the Jetpack thing is free, I think I saw it this morning logging into a WordPress admin dashboard. It's going to be a lot like a lot of these other writer tools that are out there, where you're kind of like, okay, cool. Like, you basically put a interface around a prompt that says like, write an article, blah, blah, blah. And then let me fill in what I want them to write an article about. It's like, I could very much just write the rest of that prompt myself and not pay for your software that just, is basically just like a decorative layer over the top of ChatGPT, or worse, something that's not ChatGPT but cheaper and worse. But to me, I would use the tool that I think is the best for this kind of stuff. So one of the things that we've learned, we've been using AI to generate and write articles in a bunch of different ways. And overwhelmingly, like, ChatGPT-4 is kind of like, it does a better job. And when you're talking about writing on your website, like, to be honest, like, I don't think I want an assistant from the standpoint of something to like write as I go, like writing over the top of me, or like generating a paragraph and then I edited it or something. I think that that's a bad waste of time. I think you're basically writing an article and I don't think you're letting AI do what it can help you do there and scale. So I think you want something that's good enough that it could write the whole article and you could publish it and feel good about it, and then go back and augment it or edit it if, you know, the article is actually going to get some traction or people actually want to read it. This is a great opportunity for people to not just do keyword research, but put the content out there. If people want it, I mean, how much time have we spent writing content that nobody wants to read? Oh my God. Mm-hmm. So like, let's just make all the content and then go and make it better. If there's interest, you can find out. This is the best thing ever for publishers in a lot of ways.
Have you seen any other tools like this that are coming out, or plugins that you're kind of like, probably not worth your time? Publishers should kind of like, you know, be a little cautious and getting involved in too many of these plugins.
Well, first of all, I think just the idea of like, an AI content generator plugin for WordPress, like Jetpack adding to it. This is an innovation that's putting a CD player in a car when CD players came along and taking out your tape deck. So it's a temporary bridge in a lot of ways. But, you know, realistically, this is one area right now where I wouldn't express much caution. I would say, you know, be weary of promises and, save your money. But at the same time, like, this is the time to try things. I'm cautious about telling you that the Jetpack plugin is not so great, because realistically you need to be trying AI. But I think you put it really well in the beginning, whenever you said like, you know, don't get fooled into think you're using AI whenever it's doing maybe 10% of, you know, it's helping you with maybe 10% of what you do. It should be like doing 90% of your workflow, and then you should be doing 10%, and you should be making progress 100 times faster in a year or two.
Totally agree.
Maybe faster.
So still on, yeah. So no, still being on serious, AI.
You might have to.
yeah. So you're talking about GPT-4. They are not training GPT-5 yet. This is an article from TechCrunch. And so the CEO of OpenAI, Sam Altman, stated that they have a lot of work to do before they're starting the new GPT-5 model and new ideas for it. And a lot of this is concerns by the industry. We've talked about this before. There was 1,100 signatures from people in the industry like Elon Musk, and they called for a pause in training AI systems more powerful than GPT-4. And Altman clarified that OpenAI had not started training GPT-5 and had no plans to do so for some time. And they're addressing concerns through measures like external audits, red teaming, and safety tests. And Altman emphasized that OpenAI supports self-regulation and is against regulating smaller AI startups, and that he's working with lawmakers. So I guess I wanted to know what your opinion is. Do you think that this is genuine, or is Altman playing nicely because he doesn't want to be shut down?
I mean, I don't think anything is altruistic. I don't think you can I don't think you can assume that at all. And when you're talking about a business that makes money, even something that like, you know, OpenAI, I won't even get into the whole story there, but even if something is a nonprofit, et cetera, people are people, and no one is completely not self-serving. And in many cases, you know, you're playing the battle of public opinion against lawmakers and legislators and things like that. So is this completely a altruistic, genuine, you know, effort? Probably not, almost certainly not. Sam strikes me as, and I've heard him talk in long form several times. He strikes me as someone, not like myself, but similar in that I remember telling people a long time ago, I can't be a CEO, especially of a large business, because I'm an idealist and I'm an artist, which means at some point I'm going to make decisions based on sort of my view of how something should be, and trying to, you know, fit everything else backwards into something that I think is right or just or whatever. That doesn't make it right or just. It just means that, like, I have a vision that I would like to fulfill. And that's not in the best interest of shareholders long term. However, if you are Sam Altman, you know, you are somebody that maybe has that view, in which case, like, if anybody has a slightly different view and it has a strong, you know, impact on our future, then that's concerning. And so I take everything that he says very lightly, because I do find him to be somebody that is a bit of an idealist. And so I try to look more so at what they're doing. And I would imagine that GPT-5, quote unquote, training isn't underway, because using the existing sort of parameters and methods that they've used for GPT-4, I actually don't think you're not going to see a significant jump from a 4 to a 5. And the reason is because a lot of ChatGPT is a little bit of its smoke and mirrors. It's a great at communicating. But the underlying sort of mechanisms and machine learning there are maybe not quite as impressive as I think people might assume.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that there was a big difference, from GPT-3 to GPT-4, I haven't played around with the two to really know much of the difference between, but you said you've been working with GPT-4. What would you say are like the greatest improvements from GPT-3?
It's more accurate. It's better at syntax and semantic understanding. So you'll notice that it provides, you can get more of a accurate answer from less of a prompt. So GPT-3, you know, you might ask it something or want it to do something, and you might have to basically like keep adding to your question 4 or 5 times before you've told it, you know, like, oh, well, I want this written, but you wrote it stupid, so don't write it like this. And then you just have to keep adding constraints. It does a much better job now of sort of understanding what you mean, you personally. And as the chat goes on, it learns from you much faster. So I think that's a huge benefit there. The other side of that is that the plugins make a huge difference because you're able to add in external sort of like tools and features and tricks that it can leverage. So like it can go out and get fresh information from a website or a link. I think that that's a huge advantage as well. But I think that that's where Five is probably going to emphasize its innovation, which is doing a better job of, you know, leveraging agents and plugins and things like that. So it can actually do things more than just like provide you like text back.
Hey, I'm Matt. I'm a publisher success manager here at Zoic. Have you been trying to improve your website speed and found that no matter how many plugins and technologies you put on your website, it doesn't really seem to make a difference? We now have Zoic's Leap, which is a feature that has many different optimizations and caching built in, which will allow you to optimize your site speed without needing all those plugins and technologies and extra payments and simplifying it all into one easy package. Best of all, it's free when you've got an Zoic account. So sign up today and take advantage of our new Leap tool.
So next on the docket, we have a survey that was run by Lily Ray, the Senior Director of SEO and Head of Organic Research at AMPSIV Digital, says most SEOs are not too impressed with the new Google Search generative experience. This is from Search Engine Roundtable. So the new Google Search generative experience, SGE, which I will not try to say that five times fast, has started rolling out to some users. I toyed around with it. It's been mostly helpful for me. Many SEOs, though, are not impressed with it compared to traditional Google Search. And like I said, Lily Ray, she conducted a poll on Twitter, and out of 800 votes, 12% considered SGE a significant improvement, while 37% believed it is not an improvement. The majority, 51, responded with meh, indicating a lukewarm or indifferent response. What's been your experience with it?
So, SEOs are the last person who I would go to for an opinion on whether or not something is like good or helpful for the users. SEOs have largely ruined a lot of content over the years. But that's partially Google's fault. Google's search generative experience, I think it kind of sucks. It's not bad. So I will say it is helpful. It adds features and benefits to search that I think are good. The thing is that a search engine is not like, if Google tries to balance what I need from an AI chat like experience or a agent-based AI experience with its search engine, it's going to lose a lot of people because I want a search engine sometimes. I want a list of websites. I want a list of resources that I can go to for something, and I don't want something else to make that decision for me. However, sometimes I want information, or I need something done, or I need to know how to do something, or I need something that's multifaceted. I'm searching for, how do I measure a couch and figure out if it's going to be too big for a room or something? I don't know. It's a bad example. So I don't want a list of websites for that. I actually just want to kind of toss in my dimensions and have something figure this all out for me. Search engine never is going to be the right tool for that job. But AI is. However, on the other hand, if I want to look around for where can I buy a couch near me, I don't really want a chatbot to give me a list of places. I want to kind of go look at what places are available, and I'll decide which ones maybe are worth, looking at or clicking on. So I think just fundamentally it's something that is kind of maybe a bridge into something that's going to be better. But I do think that it's helpful and good. I think SEOs are the wrong people to ask. SEOs are going to hate everything that Google is going to change and do over the next year. I have a feeling. That is one prediction that I will make that I'll happily eat my hat if I'm wrong about.
Is that a saying, eat my hat?
I think it is. I mean, I've heard a couple people say it recently. I'd never heard it before, but I figured I'd try it out on the pod.
Okay. I believe you.
I will eat my hat.
I've toyed around.
I don't know.
I will eat my hat. I won't eat mine. So I've played around with it a little bit too, and I didn't vote on the Twitter poll, but if I did, I would also click meh.
Thanks for staying objective.
Yeah. I think that, like you said, for some things when I just want an answer, it's been very helpful, but I still find myself clicking on websites anyway, because I usually want more information than it's given me. What was I looking up the other day? I was looking up something and it kept generating answers. And I'm like, this is not giving me what I want. It's not giving me what I want. And so I'm like, I got to go searching on websites. And I found something, you know, within like two clicks of a website or something like that. So it is in experimental mode. I believe I saw something that the experiment will end at the end of the year. So I know that some people have been tweeting, you know, various members of Google, John Mueller, giving their little tidbits on what they think. And apparently they have responded. Some people have responded from Google, you know, like, thanks for the advice. So I don't know if they're actually taking into consideration what people are saying, but they are responding. So if you hate or love something about it, it's worth reaching out and being like, this could be improved upon. And I think that they will, they're going to be working on it all year. I don't know. I haven't seen anything. Have you seen anything about it becoming like, worldwide? As far, I know this is an experiment. Have you seen it? Anything about, like, we're going to roll it out after this experiment on this date?
No. They've kind of broadly given ranges. And usually whenever, in my experience, I've dealt with Google a lot on this kind of stuff, both behind the scenes and then just over time. And usually when you get something broad like that, they might push it a year. I doubt they do, but I think it's definitely not going to be sooner than what they said. Rarely is.
Makes me think of the cookies, you know, they were like, it's going to be.
They're particularly long there.
Yeah. They're like, we keep pushing it out. Part of that, I think, was, you know, pandemic made things weird. But I think that people, if you can get on the wait list to try it. I got on the wait list and I think the next day I received access. So if you want to play around with it, see what Google's working on, what search could look like, you know, in the next year or two. I think it's worth looking at. But as we've said before, nothing's going to be changing overnight. So, you know, don't be buying your
because
nails.
User
on,
behavior
like,
doesn't change
away stuff.
User behavior doesn't change overnight, you know? And I think that's something that my colleague John Cole brought up recently that I thought was really adept. And that you mentioned it earlier, like, you find yourself still looking for a list of websites sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I think part of that is, you know, I've seen a couple of articles where it's like OpenAI's version of AI generative search and response is better still. And so I think part of this is that Google hasn't quite caught up yet to where Microsoft and OpenAI is. Not that they won't, you know, it is Google, but I've seen a couple articles where they're like Microsoft AI or OpenAI is still better.
I think the line in the sand that I've been able to draw, and I've yet to find too many flaws with, there's always edge cases, but I think we need to really define, I mean, we being other people, in this case, the platforms. If you're a search engine, you're a great tool when I don't know exactly what I'm looking for, or I'm looking for something and I need to know what's available to look at, or what, like, I need access to the resources that are available. I don't know something and I'm truly searching. But when I know something or I know what I'm looking for, a search engine becomes my enemy. It becomes this thing that I have to figure out, like, I have to do all the work myself and I have to use something that's not really looking for my answer or looking for the thing that I know I'm looking for. It's trying to give me what it thinks might provide that answer, which is less good than an AI. I was putting together a presentation. I found it, man, AI can really speed up the time it takes to make a great presentation, not just because you want to make slides, but to tell a story. I used Napster as an example, and I wanted, not only did I want charts, I wanted sort of like the history, and I wanted to be able to know the facts of basically 2000 till now, the state of the music industry and the transitions to streaming. And it did all the research with the plugins in ChatGPT-4. It went out and got the most relevant, like, well-cited charts and graphs to support my case. And it took like 1 minute. And I've definitely spent hours on that kind of stuff in the past to make sure that I'm factually accurate and you know what I'm talking about. And so something like that is just, I would think about that from a content creation standpoint for sure, because I mean, man, like knowing the information is like the important part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you made a good point there, was that it was factually accurate. I think, you know, people need to be careful when you're doing that stuff and check your sources. I saw an article where a lawyer had used AI to like pull court cases as examples for his case, and AI had made up for fake court cases and to prove his point, you know, and to, but because it wanted to fulfill his request. So always be careful with AI, you know, they do give hallucinations, but like you said, I think AI is just the phrase that I would use for AI content creation, digital publishing is work smarter, not harder. And
yeah,
AI is absolutely the way to do that.
Yeah.
Was there anything else that discussed that you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think, did we have a question from last week from one of our listeners?
We do. Yeah. So if there's nothing else that we, you know, you've talked about AI a lot today. You did the webinar earlier and now you're talking about it again. So we did have a question from YouTube comments. I think this was a couple podcasts ago. It's from Stuart6359. So if that's you, you had asked, let's say I wanted to make my WordPress site available in Markdown so that it is more accessible for chatbots and so on in the future. Where would I even start?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So you mentioned that it's a WordPress site. This makes it really easy. So I do think that WordPress is going to be something that everybody will want to get out of eventually. And this sort of lays the framework to where it's like you're going to get a nice picture in this project of how you can get rid of WordPress eventually and make your life a lot easier and better. And I think you start by, if you're not familiar with that WordPress has a REST API. I wish I could I used to know right off the top of my head the URL parameters. So it's yoursite.com, your WordPress site, and then it's / I think it's wp-rest or wp-json, and then it's like /v2. Anyways, you can just search WordPress REST API URL and you'll find it. But what you'll want to do is the first two parts of the slug will be like wp-json and there'll be like a v2. And then what you want is the end of the slug to end with posts. So you'll see that out there a lot. There's different types of URLs for different types of what they call like requests. So what you're going to do is you're going to enter that URL into your browser. And before you do, I want you to download the JSON Reader Chrome extension. And this will just make this whenever you type in that URL and you hit enter, it's going to make it a lot more readable and just sort of like understandable in this example. So when you put that in there first, you should be shocked, because I would bet that 90, maybe 99%, but I'll be like friendly here and say 95% of WordPress users had no idea that by default, most of your WordPress websites have your content completely available to be stolen, moved, taken, whatever, through the WordPress REST API, which is enabled by default without any form of security. So I actually think that that's kind of a good thing in a couple ways, but I also think that if you ever wonder why somebody was able to steal all your content and put it someplace else, it sure does make it really easy. So first of all, when you put that URL in and you use that Chrome extension, you're going to return a massive page that looks a little bit like code, but it'll be very readable because it'll be every single custom field and field by default inside of WordPress. So author, date published, date modified, title tag, description, you know, image header URL, all that kind of stuff will be in there along with your content itself. And then what you can do with that is you can take that out and you can basically just download that using the JSON Reader plugin or the Chrome extension. And then there's a ton of free tools out there. There's a billion ways to do it. But if you just search convert JSON to Markdown, you'll find a free converter and you can convert either a portion of that file for, you know, testing or all of it. And then you'll have this Markdown document, which it'll look a lot more like Word document, except you're going to have like little hashtags and stuff like that in front of some of the fields. So it'll be like, you know, author dash dash, you know, and then the author's name for the respective post. And then there's a lot of Markdown editors out there. There's some that are based in the web. So if you search free Markdown, you know, writer or something like that, there's a free tools you can get right in your web browser. I know on Mac, there's a really popular app called Ulysses, which allows you to write in Markdown, but there's others. And so once you do that, you can convert this JSON document to Markdown. You'll get an idea of what it looks like. And then you can go into the Markdown editors of the world. And some of them will actually include like a rich text editor right next to the Markdown editor. So you don't even have to learn to write Markdown, which in about 3 seconds of working on it, you will understand how to write Markdown. Or MDX or .md, as it's often called. MDX is a little bit more, just adds additional like features to Markdown files. And so by having that, you now have all your content available in this Markdown format. And you literally can take those Markdown files and you can upload them to any CMS. You can style them however, but more importantly, you can start basically adding what they call front matter to different parts of your Markdown content. So there's something called Front Matter CMS that's available. You can read more about Front Matter as well, but it allows you to basically take portions of your content that are in Markdown, and you can basically like put a little bracket around them and say, this is a shorter version of this article. So this is, you would add something at the top where you'd just be like shorter content and then hyphen, and then you would just like, whatever you put that bracket around, whatever content, you would just label that, and it will, you just put whatever label that was back up at the top. And what that does is it allows you to basically, or anything, say, if you wanted to just take the shorter version of an article and put it someplace, you could even allow your users to say, I want to read a shorter version of this or a longer version of it as soon as they came to your site. But it all starts with just kind of getting your content in these Markdown files. You can then, we can re-import them to WordPress along with the custom fields that were added. You can put them back into your WordPress database. You can Google how to basically like reverse that process. So Markdown to JSON, JSON back into WordPress. But there's a lot of tools you could use, as Zapier, but there's software out there that will automate and just like kind of skip some of these steps for you. If you just search, I want to convert my Markdown files back into my WordPress site. But I think if you do this project and you carry this process out, what you're going to find is that you can basically take all your articles now, and a Twitter featured thumbnail and a Facebook one and the one that goes into Google Discover, they're all different dimensions, right? So like what you want to be able to do is customize each for the platform, not just the dimensions, but also like you might want to change the thumbnail completely for something like Twitter versus something like Google Discover. And now you can actually do that. And with tools like AI, you totally should. You should be like, create me a unique Twitter thumbnail image or featured image for the Twitter markup or knowledge graph versus the Google one. And then you can eventually get to where the AI is doing a lot of the things automatically for you, where it's like you want to market the best possible way possible for each platform and be optimized for every single, you know, tool that's out there. And this allows you to continue to add over time when new things become available. You read online that OpenAI is bringing in results from websites, and you know, here's the rules for that. And you're going to go, well, how would I even do that? How would I add that to my site? You can do this in Markdown. The other option that you have is you can download the Advanced Custom Fields plugin for WordPress, and you can actually use this now, but you're going to have to create new fields. And then you're going to have to populate them with content. And that might be copy pasting portions of your content into those fields. And some of them might not be used yet. But the reality is that every time you have those, it gives you the option to then make your content more portable. You can pick it up, move it someplace else. Somebody else can pick it up, move it someplace else, where it can be like used by a user or added as context or given context to something that may need it to field an answer for somebody. It's a long answer, but I tried to make it as actionable as possible. Hopefully it at least gets you started, because I think if you can get started here, you'll see the possibilities.
Definitely. Well, if you are like Stuart 6359 and you have a question,
maybe no one's going to have a question now, I'm afraid.
I know. They're like, wow, this guy will not stop talking. you can leave us a comment on YouTube. You can go to publisherlab.org, leave us a comment, a question, and we will answer it on here. You can find us on our YouTube channel if you would prefer to watch this podcast. You can find all of our episodes on publisherlab.org or wherever you find podcasts. We would love if you rated us and left a review. We have some really good reviews on there, but some of them are from previous years when, you know, before the pandemic, when Shelby was co-hosting with you. So we would love some new ones if you're loving the podcast. RIP, we love her. She's doing great.
She's not dead.
And
it's an expression.
No, she's not dead. She's just like a chef. Make sure to leave us a review. You can find a Publisher Lab write-up on our blog. We do that every week in case you can't listen to us for some reason and you just want to skim through it. And I think that is it for this episode of the Publisher Lab.